Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference on invisible symptoms of MS. Your host, Ms. Meredith Sheehan, will now begin.
Good evening. This is Meredith Sheehan from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, and I would like to welcome you to tonight's teleconference, Invisible Symptoms of MS. Our speaker tonight is Pam Mills. Pam is an RN, a beta Saron nurse, and a certified MS nurse. She has been an MS-certified nurse for the last 15 years, and she received the National MS Society Clinician of the Year Award from the Rhode Island chapter in 2009. Pam will address the invisible symptoms of MS, such as pain, fatigue, and cognitive issues, and how to manage these symptoms effectively. Participants will have an opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call. The operator will instruct you how to do this when it is time. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Pam, and I'm going to turn the call over to you now.
Thank you, Meredith, and I'd like to take a moment to welcome everybody again, and I thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to listen to the conference. So we're going to talk about the invisible symptoms of multiple sclerosis, and the title of the program is But You Look So Good. This is a list of the invisible symptoms that we're going to discuss this evening, and they are fatigue, pain, impaired cognition, and bladder dysfunction. When you discuss pain, about 75 to 95% of patients who have multiple sclerosis have an episode or ongoing fatigue. There was a study done in Canada that found that 88% of all patients complained of fatigue, which we all know can be debilitating to this patient population, and it can cause them to have to leave the workforce. Before addressing that the fatigue is primarily related to multiple sclerosis, your clinician does need to rule out other medical issues such as thyroid issues, depression, anemia, heat exposure, sleep disorders, or pulmonary problems. When you talk about fatigue, like I mentioned, it's the most common symptom of multiple sclerosis and unfortunately does cause quite a bit of level of disability. But there's two forms of fatigue in multiple sclerosis. It can be acute or chronic. So when you have an acute fatigue, patients will tell you they're having almost a relapse or an exacerbation of fatigue. So they've done well for some time, and then they have an onset of this overwhelming fatigue that can last for weeks to months. Or you can have chronic fatigue, which is an ongoing level of fatigue that unfortunately that you experience on a daily basis. And with chronic fatigue, sometimes it's a little bit harder to treat. Before we treat either type of fatigue, we do have to make sure that we have looked at all contributing factors, such as sleep, diet, exercise, your oral intake of fluids, all sorts of medical issues. But there is a good information here that it definitely can be managed. It's sometimes difficult, but we definitely do have the tools for it to be managed. So when you talk about fatigue, you first want to look at medical conditions. So if you have a sudden onset of fatigue or an acute onset of fatigue, it should be your practitioner who's ruling out medical issues such as fever for whatever cause, whether it be related to a upper respiratory infection, a flu, or urinary tract infection. We do have to take the heat and where patients live in mind because elevated temperature requires more function on the nervous system than a low temperature. So demyelinated nerves do not work well in a heated system. And this heat can be of any source. So it doesn't have to be just temperature outside. It can be from a hot shower, a hot tub, a jacuzzi. You want to look at medications, and it's very, very important on a regular basis to review the list of medications that you're on a daily basis and bring that to your practitioner so that you can review this list of medications because sometimes the medications that we give you can cause you some fatigue, so we want to make sure that you're dosing appropriately and also maybe we can adjust the times of these medications so that they can not affect your fatigue so much. We do want to look at insomnia or other sleep problems such as restless legs. A lot of patients with multiple sclerosis, unfortunately, have spasm at nighttime. So we really have to look at other causes, make sure you're getting the appropriate amount of sleep, so that we can hopefully the next day when you wake up, your fatigue level will be at a lower level. When we're talking about sleep, there is some documentation in the literature that says that sleep disorders are slightly higher in the multiple sclerosis population than in the general population. Stress. Stress, I think, affects just about everything, and unfortunately, none of us live a stress-free life, so that if you have a stressful life or in a stressful crisis, there are ways to deal with stress, and we'll talk about some stress management skills later on. You want to rule out depression and anxiety. I've been an MS nurse for about 20 years now, and patients hate to hear these words. But unfortunately, depression and anxiety are very common comorbidities or co-diagnoses that come with multiple sclerosis. It does not have to be a reactive depression or a reactive anxiety. It can be an organic depression or anxiety. If you think about what's happening in multiple sclerosis, you're having a breakdown of myelin, or the coating of the nerve. So there's a lot of chemical changes going on in the brain. So we need to rule out organic depression and anxiety and treat it appropriately. And last but not least is something we call a superhero syndrome, not uncommon in MS patients to push on, to trudge on, to get everything that they need to get done and complete all their tasks that they believe is necessary. And then unfortunately, they pay for it with a couple of down days after they've done this. So when you talk about fatigue, you want to evaluate these sleep disorders. And a lot of physicians will now send you, they have sleep disorder specialists. So you may have to have a sleep study to see if you have kind of an obstructive sleep problem or if it's your legs. Because if you have restless leg syndrome or spasming, we treat that differently. I talked about evaluating depression. We talked about looking at your medications and really looking at the benefits versus the sedative side effects of these medications. And if the medicine is helping but making you sedated, maybe we could change the time of the medication so that if it's a medication that you take in the morning but you get tired later morning or early afternoon, maybe it's a medication we could recommend that you take in the evening, and that way that drowsy period you would be sleeping, and then when you wake up the next morning, hopefully you will be rested. Extremely important to talk about effective energy expenditure in multiple sclerosis. And really the best person to teach you about energy conservation and even a fitness program is probably an occupational therapist and a physical therapist. What those two people do will teach you exercises so that you can get some type of exercise into your daily routine without overexpending so that you're not, again, paying the price that you overworked yourself. Sometimes this is a hard line to find. It's very individual for each patient, and it really takes a clinician to help you do this. For example, when I think about energy conservation, I think about canes and walkers. Patients hate when they're having difficulty walking when a clinician recommends that they convert over to a cane or to a walker. We as clinicians are not trying to take your ability or your self-control away. We are really trying to help you save your energy. The reasons why we ask you to use a walking aid is, one, to save your energy so that you can get from point A to B more safely and in a better appropriate time because you have a better mechanism of getting there. So we talked about what things can affect it. Let's talk about the management. So you really need to look at lifestyle changes. And fatigue is extremely difficult, and it usually requires an integrated multidiscipline approach. So that means it probably requires more than one practitioner. So you're probably going to need your doctor. You're probably going to need an occupational therapist and a physical therapist. It also takes and requires a non-drug approach along with some drugs, okay? So really the most important thing is to teach patients you know, energy expenditure, and then add medication if needed. The medications that physicians tend to use now are Provigil and Nuvigil. And if you have an extremely difficult case of fatigue and we can't get these drugs approved, sometimes we can put you on a stimulant such as Ritalin because it's cheaper, and sometimes we can get it to go through the insurance easier than we can Provigil and Nuvigil. We do use a lot of antidepressants for fatigue. So when you talk to a patient about fatigue and ask them if they're depressed, and you tell us you're not depressed, but then we want to give you an antidepressant, some patients get upset. What you need to know about antidepressants, especially this class right here, Prozac, Zoloft, Lexapro, they're what we call SSRIs. So they increase the level of serotonin in your brain. And if we can increase the level of serotonin in your brain, it actually will give you more energy. And I don't know if anybody has ever been on amantadine. It's an antiviral agent that was found to work in multiple sclerosis decades ago, probably 30 to 50 years ago. It's a drug that some physicians use all the time. You take it twice a day. It really has minimal side effects. But unfortunately, it only works in approximately 50% of the patients. So you do have to take a pill twice a day. You need to try it for 4 to 6 weeks. If it hasn't worked by that point, it's probably not going to work for you. And then some physicians will move on. Other physicians will start with an antidepressant, or some physicians will start with the stimulant. It really depends on what your your practitioner's practice is. So the next symptom I want to talk about is pain. Unfortunately, pain was not recognized in multiple sclerosis for many, many years. And now we clearly know there is a pain syndrome in multiple sclerosis, and it does affect your quality of life. We know that 65 to 80% of patients will experience some type of pain with their multiple sclerosis at some point during their diagnosis with MS. Some patients present with a painful syndrome. Some patients can have pain during the length of time that they have MS, and then some patients don't. Pain can increase when it's associated with a relapse or exacerbation. And just as fatigue, it can be acute or chronic. So you can have a sudden onset of pain. It can last for weeks to months. Or unfortunately, you can have chronic pain with multiple sclerosis. So let's talk about what pain is. Pain is defined as whatever the experiencing person says it is, exists wherever he or she says it does. Pain is very individualized. It's a learned social and cultural response. So every person that has pain will interpret it differently. There are some similar pain syndromes in multiple sclerosis, but pain is whatever the patient tells you it is. Pain is extremely complex phenomena. When you talk about the nervous system, you have what we call nerve tracts. They leave your brain, they go down your spinal column and back up your spinal column so that the message leaves your brain, travels down your spinal column, and then the message travels back up the spinal column on the other side. And unfortunately, in multiple sclerosis, you can have a demyelinated nerve or nerves anywhere on this axis or anywhere in the brain or the spinal cord, whether it's ascending or descending. So whether it's on the cut side that's coming down or the side that's going up. There's many causes and types of pain in multiple sclerosis, and here's a list. Neuropathic, so that's kind of that burning, aching pain. Musculoskeletal, which is usually related to muscles and joints. Optic neuritis, which I'm sure most of you have had, but for anybody who may not have ever had optic neuritis, it's demyelination of the optic nerve. The patient will have pain with movement of the eye or pain behind the eye, and they also can have loss of vision, unfortunately. Spasticity. So spasticity is the tightening of muscles. Unfortunately, it occurs more in the evening or when you're heated or have an infection, and very uncomfortable for a lot of patients. And also headache. Headache is slightly more common in the patients with multiple sclerosis than the general population. We all know that headache is very common in the general population, but unfortunately it's slightly more common in MS. The next slide talks about the invisible symptoms of acute pain, and I'm just going to list them for you and give you a little explanation. So trigeminal neuralgia. For anybody who doesn't know what that is, that's something that some you may have heard as tic de la rue. So it's the fifth cranial nerve in your face. It's an excruciating pain. It's one of the least common pains in multiple sclerosis, but unfortunately one of the worst pains in MS. You can have spasm or spasticity. So we talked about that. That is the muscle tightening and pulling on the tendons, etc. So one muscle is pulling while the other one is trying to release, and so you can have this tightness. Some patients will explain it as a spasm, so just a tightness, twitching. Some patients will just tell you that their legs are stiff, they're heavy. Vermeet sign is if a patient takes their chin, they bend it down to their chest, and you usually will have an electrical sensation that travels down your spinal cord and out your arms and legs. Lightning-like extremity pain is shooting electrical pain just in an arm and a leg or a leg, but is not related to the flexion of your neck. We talked about optic neuritis. Retrobulbar pain is pain behind the eye, and occasionally when you have optic neuritis, you can have increased pressure behind the eye, and so you have what we call retrobulbar pain. Dysesthetic extremity pain is numbness, tingling, itching, burning, all of those very odd sensations that patients can describe when they have multiple sclerosis. And then band-like pain in the torso or extremity. In the literature, this is sometimes reported as the MS hug. So not uncommon for patients to tell you that they have tightening sensation around the breast area or the waist. When you talk about invisible symptoms but with chronic pain, those are more of the pains that last longer. You have them for a long time. So back pain, and it's usually lower back pain. Musculoskeletal pain, so that can be any type of joint pain. And with MS, patients can have them in the shoulders, and they can have them in the hips, and headache. When you're talking about treatment for pain, and we're going to talk about non-pharmacological, so no medication treatments, and really the most important treatment for pain, no matter what its cause is stretching exercises. And physical therapists are a great resource for you to be evaluated, to find out the deficit, and then be able to teach you stretching and exercise plan that you could be able to do at home. Now, as many people know, insurance doesn't pay for long-term therapy, so it is almost a requirement that once you are evaluated, you're taught these exercises, and then it's very important that you continue these exercises at home. If you have a relapse and have a new deficit or a new change in your function, you could then be reevaluated by a physical therapist. Insurance usually will pay. And then as you're recovering and you come back to your baseline, most likely you would again have to go back to doing your home exercise plan. We want to control your spasticity, so we want to make sure that you're not at risk for infection, that if you have an infection, we treat it appropriately. And then we want to really teach you some stretching exercises to prevent the spasticity. Assistive devices, we talked about it earlier, but assistive devices are really to help you minimize the strain of anything, a spasm, strain on your back, strain on your knees. So wherever we feel there's a deficit or a weakness, sometimes we'll add an assistive device so that you won't compensate and injure yourself on the other side. Massage is good. You have to be careful with massage because some massage therapists are a little bit aggressive, and sometimes we don't want you to be too aggressive because we can kind of cause you to have more difficulty. So that's kind of be a gentle massage. Acupuncture has been proven to be very effective in multiple sclerosis, as well as mindful meditation. And some people, you know, whether they just take themselves and sit quietly in a room with their eyes closed and try to just get into themselves, or some people have to take a more active type of meditation. When you talk about pain and we talk about medications for pain, we usually talk about a group of antidepressants, an old group of antidepressants called tricyclics. And what they do is they help regulate the neurotransmitters in the brain. And so they help with the reuptake of serotonin and norepinephrine. So serotonin and norepinephrine are chemicals in the brain. And in multiple sclerosis, sometimes these pathways can be interrupted due to the demyelination. So if we add something like a tricyclic antidepressant, and for some people, you may know that as Elavil or amitriptyline, these are the kind of drugs that help smooth the message through the nerve, so it will help decrease the pain. Here is a list. Trofinil, again, an old medication, Elavil, and then the newer medication would be nortriptyline. Unfortunately, all medications have side effects, as you, I'm sure, all are well aware. And the side effects of tricyclics can be low blood pressure, possible seizures, dry mouth, and weight gain. And most common, you hear about dry mouth and weight gain, and that doesn't make patients comfortable. The next slide talks about antiepileptics. So we do use anti-seizure when we're treating pain. And the way they work is that they block the sodium channels or the calcium channels. What happens in multiple sclerosis is the nerve wants to send the message. So when the electrical stimulation is coming through the nerve, it comes to an area of the nerve that has lost its myelin, it becomes to fire very erratically. If we put you on an anti-seizure medication, by altering the sodium and the calcium channels, we can smooth out this electrical message and help the nerve fire more appropriately. Those drugs are Dilantin, Tegretol, Neurontin. The newer drugs are Trilipil and Lyrica. These medications can make you sleepy. So if you're taking them more than once a day, you want to divide the doses. If you have to take a higher dose, it's usually recommended you take the higher dose in the evening before bed and take the lower doses during the day. They also can cause dry mouth. They can cause dizziness, fatigue, double vision, and rash. There are some topical ways you can treat pain. So a lot of patients, like I mentioned, can tell you that they have burning, itching, tingling pain. You can attempt to treat them topically. And I just want to caution you that if you try any of these, some patients will tell you that it doesn't feel so good. It can make it actually worse. And then some other patients actually find it soothing. So you really have to kind of try it and see if it works for you. There's something called capsaicin cream, and it comes in a 0.5% cream. You use it 4 times a day. It's made from hot peppers, so ultimately it's like cayenne pepper cream. And the way it releases the chemical at the tissue level sometimes can decrease the burning sensation of pain. There's the lidocaine patch or lidoderm. You take these patches, you apply them on the area that is uncomfortable, and you usually can get some relief with that. There are also something called EMLA and LMX. Those also are lidocaine-based creams or ointments, and you would apply them in small amount to the area, and it kind of numbs the area, hopefully allowing you to get some relief. And then some patients will tell you that regular aspirin cream will help also. The next symptom that I want to talk about is cognition. And Dr. Shapiro is an MS specialist out of Minnesota, and he says cognition is memory, planning, foresight, and judgment are part of what makes us human. This is what we call cognition. So when you talk about cognition, unfortunately, it's changes in your thought process, your memory, and it's usually short-term memory, your judgment, your ability to concentrate or multitask. You can have change in your mood and your emotion. Now, we can usually identify this in patients who have higher level jobs, so it usually becomes more pronounced when you have something requires multitasking. So when you're trying to balance your checkbook and listen to the radio or balance your checkbook and other people are in the environment making noise, you have more difficulty completing that task of balancing the checkbook than if you were in a quiet space. It's the executive functioning that some patients tend to lose. It's usually very often very minor. It can be very individual, and usually it's not noticed by anybody but yourself or your immediate family. 50 to 60% of patients with MS will be affected with some type of change in their cognition, whether it's just some short-term memory loss or whether it's some word finding. And again, it's usually not significant. You as the patient usually notice it more than anybody else, and then your family. It can be a presenting symptom, or it can come years after you've had the diagnosis. It does not correlate with what we call your EDSS. EDSS is the Expanded Disability Status Scale, and this is a scale of physical function that neurologists use when they're treating patients on clinical trials. This is how most of the medications were approved that we're using now. We measure patients using this scale to see the change in disability. Cognition does not correlate with disability, so you could be in a wheelchair and not be able to have physical function, but you could be grossly intact with your cognition. Or it could be the opposite. You could be fully physically functioning, walking, talking, and, you know, getting around, but unfortunately you have some short-term memory loss or word-finding difficulties. And really one of the most things, and I've said it numerous times over the last two slides, I really want to talk to you about it's usually very mild to moderate multiple sclerosis versus severe. It's not like Alzheimer's. It doesn't change into Alzheimer's. We get a lot of patients talking about that and their concern. So the next slide talks about don't always blame your multiple sclerosis. So we need to always remember that, unfortunately, you have the diagnosis of MS, but you can have other things going on in your life. So the first thing I want to talk about is aging process. So as we all grow older, we do have some brain tissue loss. It is slightly accelerated in multiple sclerosis. That's known as brain atrophy. So, you know, just the normal aging process could also add to this. And then for women, unfortunately, hormonal changes can really play an impact on this. So when you're going through menopause, you have a lot of hormonal changes, then it is possible that you'll have some cognition changings with that. Then you want to look at other medical conditions, and we talked about this. You want to make sure that you haven't recently had an injury, haven't hit your head or done something like that. You got to think about diabetes because that can alter your cognition. Vascular problems, so if you've ever been told you had a TIA or a transient ischemic attack or a stroke, that will alter your cognitive function. Depression or your emotional state, stress, those will all alter your cognitive function, along with heart disease because you're not getting a good flow of blood to your cerebral cortex, so to your brain, and so sometimes you can have cognitive dysfunction. And then we talked about it, pain, sleep disturbance, and fatigue. If you have any of those, they there can impact your cognition. So as you can see, one symptom can link you into another symptom, to almost like a cycle of behavior. So if you have a pain that's keeping you up at night, it can lead you to have fatigue. And then if you have these three things, you can then have some cognitive dysfunction because you're not getting enough rest, et cetera. The other things you want to look at is medications. And I told you that it's a very important task to write down the list of medications. Make sure you review it at least on a monthly basis. And always take this list of medications with you when you go to see your neurologist. Sometimes it's very helpful to kind of just look at the list to see if that we can change the way you're dosing, or we can change the dosage or the time of the dosing so that we could have it less impact some of these symptoms that you're having. Lifestyle can clearly impact all of these things. So pain, cognition, and fatigue, alcohol or drug use, sleep, stress, and poor nutrition. Poor nutrition, you know, it's on the bottom of the list, but, you know, it's very, very important that everybody's getting a balanced diet with enough oral intake of fluids. Patients tend to watch their fluid intake because they may have issues with their bladder. They don't want to leave that drink too much if they have to go out, because then they're going to have to worry about finding a bathroom, et cetera. But probably one of the best ways to at least help with fatigue and cognition is making sure that you are adequately hydrated with oral fluids and also following a good diet. So as far as cognition, when you talk about multiple sclerosis, it's can be long-term, it's usually short-term versus long-term, and most patients can find ways to compensate. So there are many patients who have issues with verbal communication related to multiple sclerosis, but your brain has the ability to compensate or retrain that area of the brain if there's demyelination in there, and that way retract or send the message a different way. So there's something called TRAP, T-R-A-P. So when you're in a conversation with somebody, you want to always translate the conversation into your own words. So if you can recall the conversation in your brain in your own words, you'll have a better ability to recall that conversation later on. If you rehearse it immediately and you relate this new information to something old, some old piece of information, again, you will have a better ability to recall it later on. And like people tell you, a picture is worth 1,000 words. So if you can kind of make a picture in your mind about the conversation that you're trying to follow and remember, you'll have, a better chance to remember this conversation and the information that the person is sharing with you. And then practice the output. So if you can then recall the conversation in your own words when you're alone after this conversation, you'll most likely remember the information. The next slide tells you to listen. So it's L-I-S-T-E-N. So what you want to do, the best way to remember a conversation is make sure you're always looking at the person whom is speaking. It's very important that you maintain interest in the conversation. Just like anybody else without MS, if you cannot be interested in the confirmation, your recall of the conversation is going to be much less than if you're interested in it. And then speak less than half the time. So if you're really striving to remember the information someone's sharing with you, it's very important that you speak less of the time than the person who is having the conversation with you. Try not to interrupt or change the topic, because if you interrupt or change the topic, you're going to lose the first part of that conversation and you may not be able to recall it. You want to always engage yourself in the conversation. It's really important to notice people's body language, because if you notice people's body languages, you usually can kind of get a reading of which way the conversation is going. The next slide talks about treatment of cognition. And you want to start with the basics. You really want to eat a healthy, well-balanced diet, and we talked about it. It's very important to drink, 64 ounces of fluids, and we've been hearing that for years. And most people do not drink 64 ounces of fluids. But if you could have 2 to at least 3 glasses of water a day, you definitely would be ahead of the game. Exercise routinely. Now, I'm not saying you have to go out and, run 3 miles, etc. Depending on your level of disability, if you have any, you really have to work out an exercise plan. And again, I would recommend you be evaluated by a physical therapist, and they would help you come up with an exercise plan. And you really want to get adequate rest. Sleep is very, very important. And then we want to add some nurture. We'd really like you to manage your stress. And it really depends on how you manage your stress. So we want to kind of recommend meditation. We want you to take out time for yourself. We want you to kind of sit back and really relax. And then lastly, but really very importantly, it's extremely important to remain social. And some people may not be able to get out of the house due to their multiple sclerosis, but if you can get on the phone and have conversations with people, or you could use the internet, whatever ways you can communicate with other people is very helpful. The MS therapy, so all of the injectable therapies and the newer therapies, orals and intravenous, the data shows that the earlier you start them, the better you should do with your multiple sclerosis long term. So there is a belief that if you get on therapy early, you probably will have better cognitive function than if you decided to wait to begin treatment. There's not a lot of data to support that, but we clearly believe that these medications do help with cognition. The other medications that can help with memory and alertness is Aricept and Sylar. Now, Aricept, you may have heard about it. It's a drug used in Alzheimer's. There's been some small clinical trials in multiple sclerosis that show it may help some patients. Not everybody benefits, but it's a low-risk medication, and you could talk to your doctor about it. Sylar is a stimulant. Some patients, they have more cognitive difficulties and require a little bit more of stimulation versus the way Aricept works. The other thing is you always want to talk to your physician or your practitioner. It may be a nurse practitioner or physician's assistant, whatever level. You really want to discuss your fears. You really want to ask questions openly about what questions you have about your cognition and how you feel your cognition is being impacted. You want to talk with other people with multiple sclerosis. You'll realize that you kind of fit right in. Sometimes I realize that patients feel like what they're going through is different or they're alone. But if you talk to enough people, you'll start to hear the same scenario. You really want to learn. You want to learn. You want to get as much information that's available to you on these symptoms and how to treat them. And the MS Society is a great place to go to. And then you really want to kind of dispel the myths and remove the stigma. So one of the biggest myths people worry about is that the cognitive changes in MS, is something like Alzheimer's. It's not as Alzheimer's. It's clearly much more milder. The next slide talks about you want to boost your brain. So you want to boost your brain power. So you want to always set your own pace. It's really important to kind of have a task list. You want to give yourself time to complete the task. And if I've not learned anything doing this for 20 years, I would recommend you prioritize. What I tell patients is what's most important to you, you need to do early on in the day if you can. Or if you're a mom who has kids and they come home from school, you got to get dinner ready and get them to bed, and you really want to, maintain your level of energy to do that, then you need to that's a priority to you, and you need to be able to rest during the day and make sure that you are available to do what's most important to you. You want to learn how to limit your distractions. So when you're doing a task, you want to make sure that you're not being interrupted, because if there's any type of interruption, you'll probably forget where you were in the task. And patients complain of this a lot if they're still cooking. So if they're trying to complete a recipe and maybe their husband comes home and talks about something in the middle of the recipe, they've kind of lost the steps to it. So you do want to limit your interruptions. It's very good to write down, information in your own words so that you can repeat it. And so that way, when it's in your own words, it's usually a little bit easier for you to recall it. So you want to make sure that you write things down and then kind of go over it in your head. Journaling is a very good way to do this. And using mental pictures also helps you with your memory. And last but not least, you really want to be patient with yourself. What happens with when you kind of have word-finding difficulties, you're not being able to complete a task, you get agitated with yourself. And this agitation will then clearly interrupt the neural pathways, and then whatever you're trying to get done will be more difficult. The next slide talks about use helpers. You really want to take advantage of using as many things around you to help, your memory. So as far as medications, a medication box is helpful. You can set an alarm so that you take your medications at a certain time. You can use a computer to do that. You can use a PDA. These days you can use a smartphone. As far as like keeping your car keys, you can use a car finder or key finder. You can use a tape recorder and tape the conversation so that you can listen to it again later on. You want to use labels and baskets. So what this means is kind of organizing your kitchen or office space for paying bills, etc. You want to label everything and put them in baskets so that you'll be able to recall. And this talks about voicemail and email. Using voicemail and retaining the voicemail so you can listen to the message again. And the same thing with the email. You keep the email sometimes so that you can kind of repetitively look at it, and that way you'll have more time to retain the information. The next slide talks about use it or lose it, and that's the bottom line. So you really kind of have to challenge yourself all the time. You want to play games, cards, checkers, read, do puzzles, anything to keep your brain active. And I don't know if anyone has seen it, but there's something on TV called Lumosity. It's LUMOSITY.com. And they have some brain puzzles to kind of keep the plasticity of your brain going. And then the last symptom that I want to talk about today, and those three were sensory. They were fatigue, they were pain, and they were cognition. Now we're going to go into a more, unfortunately, a physical symptom, which would be bladder dysfunction. 80% of patients will experience some type of bladder change in the course of their illness. It could be, again, intermittent, so come and go. So some patients can have urinary retention, during an exacerbation, or they can have urinary retention constantly, over the course of their illness. Symptoms may occur at any time, so you can present with a urinary symptom, or you could develop it over the course of your illness, and they are usually manageable. In MS, unfortunately, there's two types of dysfunction. So you can have an inability to store, an inability to empty. And then there are some patients who have a combination. So they can't store, and then they can't empty. So they only store a little bit, and then they have difficulty emptying. Symptoms are such as urinary urgency. So that means when you say, your brain says to you, I have to go to the bathroom, that means you have to go to the bathroom right now. frequency is that you go multiple times during the day. So you can go every half hour, etc. Hesitancy is when you get to the bathroom and you rush there because you had to go. You had urgency. And now you sit on the toilet and you can't go. Nocturia is urinating during the night. And we really try to treat this because we don't want you up all night urinating because, again, it's going to impact your level of fatigue. Incontinence or loss of urine. And then bladder infections or urinary tract infections are very common in multiple sclerosis in women who have MS. So what do you want to do to manage this? There are some dietary items that you'd really like to avoid, and those are mostly alcohol and aspartame and caffeine. Caffeine increases the irritability to your bladder, and it makes you have to urinate more. So it's very helpful if you can stay away from coffee and teas that are caffeinated, and then also colas. It's recommended that you stop drinking a couple hours before bedtime, so that way you're not getting up during the night multiple times trying to empty your bladder. You want to be well educated on the symptoms of a urinary tract infection, and sometimes this is difficult for patients with MS because a lot of women who have urinary tract infections are what we call asymptomatic. So when urinary symptoms are usually, unfortunately, the same as a lot of MS symptoms, so urgency, frequency, or burning with urination. Now, in a lot of women, you are asymptomatic, so you do not necessarily have the sensation in that part of your body to be able to interpret it. So if you ever notice that you're having MS symptoms that are increased and you don't really have an idea of what's going on, it's always best to reach out to your physician because checking a urinalysis and seeing if you have some type of infection, because when you have an infection, you have an increase in MS symptoms. And it's very important to get a urinalysis so that if you have a urinary tract infection, that you can treat this early because sometimes it can be quite debilitating. I want to talk about bladder management as far as clothing. When, you know, we really encourage patients to get out of the house and do as much as they're possible. And a lot of patients are hesitant because when they leave their house, they're unsure of the environment. So the first thing is you want to be able to wear clothing and have it designed that when you get to the bathroom, you can get it off easily so that you can empty your bladder and be on your way. When you go out to a new environment, a restaurant, the theater, etc., you want to look at the availability of the bathroom. So kind of get in your mind where you're seated and where the bathroom is. Hopefully the bathroom is handicap accessible if needed. You want to take in mind if there's any stairs and it's going to require a little bit more time getting there. And when you go, you want to make sure if you're using assistive devices that you take them with you. The next slide talks about if you have continued bladder difficulty, it's very important to be evaluated by a urologist. They specialize just in bladder control, and they could investigate whether you're having urinary retention, so holding on to urine, or you have a dysfunction in emptying. You want to make sure you maintain adequate oral intake. You want to avoid those bladder irritants, which are caffeine, alcohol. You want to take frequent bathroom breaks. You want to kind of go back to the same things that we taught our kids when we were doing toilet training. It's best that you empty your bladder every 2 to 3 hours, so that way you won't have any accidents. You can use medication as prescribed by your neurologist or urologist for your bladder difficulties. And unfortunately, some patients will have to use intermittent catheterization if the medications don't help. And now I'll open it up to questions and answers.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Again, to ask a question, press 1 on your phone at this time. The first question is from Jennifer. Jennifer, please go ahead.
Hi. Yes. I'm wondering if
it can be determined as to where the demyelination exists to better understand how much of it is affected.
That's what MRI is for, Jennifer. So if you get an MRI of the brain and spinal cord, you know, you'll see these MS lesions, and then we'll be able to tell you, you know, the area that you have the lesion, and then you can have a discussion with your neurologist of what that affects. So the best way to see those areas is by MRI.
Okay, the next question is from Howard. Please go ahead.
When you speak about having 64 ounces of fluid a day, does that count things like juice, milk, tomato juice, tea? Does that include, or does it just have to be water itself?
Nope. Howard, that includes any oral intake as long as it's not caffeinated, because caffeine will stimulate your kidneys to actually allow you to secrete more urine. So as long as it's non-caffeinated fluids, you should be good.
The next question is from Alicia. Please go ahead.
Hello. What is the difference, please, between a urinary tract infection and a bladder infection?
Well, urinary tract infection is down lower in the tract, and if you don't treat it, the infection can go up into your bladder, which is, you know, a little bit higher than the tract, and then it can actually become a kidney infection, because what happens is the tract can get infected, and then if it gets into the bladder, then the bladder tends to hold on more urine, and that urine can back up into the kidneys, and then you can get a kidney infection. And that process is unfortunately a little bit more common in women, just because the way we're built versus men. It's much more difficult for men to get a urinary tract. Not that it doesn't happen, but it's, you know, the way females are built is just unfortunately easier for women to get urinary tract infections.
The next question is from Claudette. Please go ahead.
Yes, I would like for you to explain organic fatigue.
So, Claudette, what we believe organic fatigue is that, you know, I told you that myelin is being broken down. So the process behind MS is an inflammatory process. There's a secretion of inflammatory cells that destroys the myelin. When the myelin is being broken down, there is additional release of something called cytokines or proteins. And so what we believe organic fatigue is a picture of all of these chemicals being released in your brain. So some patients who have a lot of active disease or new lesions will experience more acute fatigue, whereas patients who've had disease a long time will tend to have chronic disease fatigue.
The next question is from Carrie. Please go ahead.
Ma'am, MS affects balance and falling as well as walking?
Yes, it can, Terry. So depending on, just like we talked a few minutes ago, depending on where the lesion is, so where the MS lesion is in your brain depends on what is affected. So patients who tend to have balance issues can have demyelination in what we call the cerebellum, which is the base of the brain or the brainstem, or even the spinal cord.
Okay, and the next question is from Judy. Please go ahead.
I'm wondering, is there any way to speed up end of an exacerbation of fatigue? Does more rest make the exacerbation end quickly, or is it going to just end when it's going to end?
Well, when you talk about an exacerbation of fatigue, if there's anything else going on, Terry, so if you had some visual loss or weakness, then your physician most likely would treat you with steroids, and that would shorten the exacerbation. Steroids do not change the long-term course of your multiple sclerosis, but they do shorten exacerbations. Now, in saying that, most physicians are a little bit hesitant using steroids alone to treat fatigue, because we don't, you know, when we really need it for visual loss or some kind of loss of function, we want them to be effective, and the more you use them, sometimes they don't. So, no, resting and really taking care of yourself is really the best thing you can do to help yourself. There's no documentation whether it will cause the exacerbation to recover quickly, but, you know, it's best in taking care of yourself is the best thing.
Okay, the next question is from Linda. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. In the pain category, you addressed something, I think you termed it excruciating headaches, and you called it something, and I missed what you call it, and I suffer from those. Could you backtrack and give me the name of what it was you called that particular symptom?
The only thing that I talked about is headaches is that I said that it was, they're unfortunately more common in MS than in the general population. I didn't really go into headache types, Linda, because they can be very different for each patient.
Okay, the next question is from Crystal. Please go ahead.
Hi. You had talked about the numbness and tingling, and I was just wondering what you would call that and if there was anything you could do to treat it.
Numbness and tingling, itching, burning, those kind of sensations are sensory sensations, and they're called dysesthetic pain or dysesthesias. And usually you will treat that with anti-seizure medications. So a lot of patients who have numbness, tingling, burning, usually the first drug used is gabapentin or Neurontin or Trileptal or Lyrica these days. And those are all, if you look at them, they're used for neuropathic pain and they can be used for seizures.
The next question is from Terry. Please go ahead.
Hi, you had mentioned nocturia is something that you should address. And other than just reducing how much you drink a few hours before you go to sleep, are there drugs that you recommend, or what is it that people do to help with bladder problems at night?
Yeah, I mean, if you've tried stopping your intake a couple of hours earlier and that's not helping, then you can speak to your neurologist and they may ask you to see a urologist. But there are things like Ditropan or Detrol, the newer drugs, or like Vesicare, and those will just help you hold or expand your bladder to hold a little bit more urine so that you're not getting up during the night. So if stopping fluids early is not helping, and that's probably the only thing you can do on your own, then you probably would need some type of medication introduced.
And the last question in queue is from Elizabeth. Please go ahead.
Hi there. All I wanted to say was thank you so much for doing this teleconference. You are fabulous.
Very
You're knowledgeable.
Welcome, Elizabeth.
Very knowledgeable. I'm so glad I tuned in. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good evening.
You too.
And there are no other questions in the queue.
Okay, this is Meredith again from the Rhode Island chapter. Thank you so much, Pam. That was fabulous, and kudos to you for coming out tonight. It was wonderful. I hope everyone enjoyed the call tonight. And the series continues on December 12th with a conference titled MS, A Family Affair. Please contact your local chapter to register for this upcoming teleconference. I'd really like to ask you to stay on the line to answer five quick questions about this program, just survey questions, because your input really helps us as we plan these teleconferences in the future. So thanks so much, and I hope you all have a great night. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, please remain on the line for a brief polling session. For the following questions, you can press 1 to agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. The first question is, I learned at least one new thing about managing an invisible symptom of MS. Press 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. I learned at least one new thing about managing an invisible symptom of MS. Polling is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare the next question. For the next question, I understand how to better cope with at least one of my invisible symptoms of MS. Press 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. I understand how to better cope with at least one of my invisible symptoms of MS. 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. Polling is closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare the next question. For the next question, I learned better ways to communicate about invisible symptoms to family and friends. Press 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. I learned better ways to communicate about invisible symptoms to family and friends. Press 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. Polling is closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare the next question. And for the next question, I learned better ways to communicate about invisible symptoms to my physician. Press 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. I learned better ways to communicate about invisible symptoms to my physician. 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. Polling is closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare the last question. For the last question, I am more likely to register for other teleconferences because I like this learning format. Press 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. I am more likely to register for other teleconferences because I like this learning format. Press 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. That concludes our polling session for this evening. Thank you for your participation. You may all disconnect.